Welcome to Crossroads, a podcast that explores the intersection of faith and Christian living. Crossroads is part of the media ministry at Fifth Avenue Presbyterian Church in New York City. Get to know us by visiting us online at fapc.org.
Hi, I'm Jamie, Director of Christian Education here at Fifth Avenue Presbyterian Church. This spring, we've been talking about Mothers of the Messiah for our Credo Theological Foundations of Our Faith with our clergy. Today, I'm really excited that we're going to be talking with Reverend Natalie Owens Pike about the story of Rahab. Welcome, Natalie.
Thanks, so glad, Jamie.
You're able to join me.
Me too. This is awesome.
So something that we are trying out in order to tell the story is that we are going to each have 30 seconds to do a recap of the story of Rahab. Now, folks at home, I'll invite you to go ahead and read the story because it definitely needs more than 30 seconds. But we want to just give you a little hint, maybe something a little bit funny to talk about this story. So would you like to go first or would you like me to go first?
I will go first so that you can fill in whatever I forget.
All right.
So
wonderful.
We're in Joshua 2. Do you start a timer or do I just get to go?
I am going
to
start a timer.
Oh, okay.
Ready? Get set. Go.
Okay. So we're in Joshua 2 and there's an Israelite army that is coming to Jericho to attack the city and come into the city and take over the promised land that God has covenanted to them. Rahab runs an inn/brothel, who depending on who you're talking to, and she entertains some spies in this place, in her home and place of employment, knows that they are planning to storm the city. And so when the king comes looking for the spies, she hides them and barters with them for her life by saying she'll protect them later.
And you're done. You got pretty far along in the story. So I'm gonna go ahead and do 30 seconds. You can count for me those 30 seconds.
I'm timing you.
And I'll fill in some of the end.
Ready, set, go.
All right, so Rahab, so we've already got the Jericho and Joshua and the spies. We already got that part. They make it into Jericho. They look around. They get with together with Rahab, and she is going to hide them. She hides them. She lies to the soldiers who come looking for them. They crawl out her window and run away, and they promise her, because she saved them, that they are going to come and save her when they take over Jericho. And if she lowers a red rope out of her window,
Done.
She will be saved.
Woo! I think we did it.
I think we did do it. Very nice job.
Wow.
Folks at home, you should definitely go read that story.
Joshua 2.
Because we may have missed a few key points, but hopefully you've gotten the gist of it there.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Well, this actually, having to summarize this story in 30 seconds, really segues into one thing I was thinking about when I was researching and planning for this credo, because we learn about this story. I remember in my own like VeggieTales or, you know, church school experience of the song, Joshua Fought the Battle of Jericho.
Are you going to sing it for us?
Joshua Fought the Battle of Jericho.
I think that's enough of that.
We teach kids a song because we have this sort of simplified version of this story. The important detail that we're taking away from the story is the walls come tumbling down. They're victorious in battle. And I really had to go back and read Joshua 2 and think, oh, who is Rahab in this story? How do we more fully develop the character of Rahab in this story? And why do we take away from this chapter just these kind of simple details of victory in battle and distill it into song for children?
Those are deep, deep questions. Mm-hmm. All right, well, let's jump kind of straight to Rahab, and then I do want to go back and talk about Joshua fighting the Battle of Jericho.
Great.
But let's go straight to Rahab. What did you, in your research this time, what did you discover about who Rahab is as a person? Because you're right, we do skip over her a lot, or we really remember her through this red rope. And mm-hmm. But what did you find out about Rahab?
Yeah, so Rahab is described as an innkeeper or a brothel owner. or a sex worker, a prostitute, depending on the translation that you read. So you get her name, which some translations say is a slang for genitalia, and then you get her profession immediately following her name. And you know that she's an outsider to the Israelite people because she is a woman living in Canaan. So you're immediately identifying her with this profession that is on the margins of society. It might be outside of what we view as respectable way for a woman to either claim power or to make an income for her family in this community at this time. So we learn about who she is through what she does, and we're immediately kind of associating that that judgment with her. I think it's important for us to know who she is in this story, in this lineage that Matthew is setting out for us, because we see each of these women as outsiders to the center of society, whether it's the place that they come from or the profession that they practice or who they are within the place. So she's outside of kind of the norms of society, and yet she's named in this lineage that Matthew sets forth for us, all the way down to Jesus, with only four named women. She's one of them. And so I started thinking about, what does that teach us about who Jesus is? What does that teach us about how Jesus interacts with women, people of all genders that are on the margins or the outside of the center of society? And how does she claim agency and power in this story, in the limited ways that she has it? Well, she's listening. She's overhearing what's happening. She's protecting her family through a pretty sophisticated negotiation with these spies, and at great risk to herself. The king's soldiers come into her house and say, "Where are these men?" And at this point, she doesn't have any allegiance to them, but she says, they just left. You just missed them. You can chase them down this way. Go after them." And uses that as leverage to say, "I have protected you, so now protect my family when you come to storm the city gates."
And you mentioned Matthew's genealogy. It's interesting to hear perspectives. Why do you think that Matthew may have included these women in this genealogy when it was so rare? There aren't any others in the Bible that include women.
Yeah. Well, Matthew's audience was primarily Jewish. He's writing at the closest time to Jesus' death. And the community he's writing to is trying to figure out, how do we navigate intercultural relationships? How do we invite a broader circle of cultural backgrounds and people to worship the God that we have these stories to tell about? How do we invite more people into this story? So there was a lot of concern about what do outsiders overhear of this story, and how do we invite them into being central to the story? So each of these women are outsiders to the faith, but come into it in some way. Rahab, in particular, represents, you know, when she negotiates with these soldiers, with these Israelite soldiers, she includes in her negotiation a profession of faith. She says, "I have seen what your God has done for others, and so I will follow your God because of what your God has made possible." And this profession of belief, profession of faith, is an example to others, no matter who you are, no matter if you're profession is on the margins of society, no matter if you are on the outside, the outskirts of respectability within the culture, no matter if you have a historical connection to this faith, you too can profess faith. You can join into the story. You can cast yourself into the lineage of Jesus, into the future lineage of who follows Jesus and his life and story and ministry on earth.
Yeah. All right. So I want to take us back to Joshua fighting this Battle of Jericho, because I think that is the part of the story that I struggle with the most. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, it is easy for us to think when they save Rahab, this is so great.
They sure do.
They save her and her family. She puts that rope down the outside and they have saved her. She becomes a part of the community. She marries one of the folks that are part of that community and obviously is part of this lineage of Jesus. But we often skip the kind of brutal things that are happening, this holy war. What do we do with that?
Yeah. Great question. Jamie and I had a lot of chats about this in our office. What do we do with this question? This is a prime example of a story in our sacred texts, which is we've simplified for children in song and is not a simple story. There are many consequences to the battle in this story and a lot to learn from that. I think when I was doing research for this, one of the things that many scholars have emphasized is that there are phrases to describe this battle as the complete and total destruction of Canaanites, of the Canaanite people and of Canaan, in order for the Israelites to come into the land and fulfill the covenant of the promised land with the Hebrew people. And there's just not significant archaeological or historical evidence for that ever having taken place. So when I say, you know, we've simplified this story for children, it's because it has a lot of literary elements. There's intrigue, there's a battle, there's spies, there's suspense. And it's something that that we can simplify for children because of those elements, but we should read it as a literary story. We should read it as a story being told within a people who are trying to make meaning of their history. They are trying to make meaning of their covenant with God. They're not necessarily telling a historical battle blow by blow, right? But they're trying to write a story of victory and triumph from a place of lack of power, from a place of being on the margins of power in society.
Yeah. I really love that take on it, that it doesn't necessarily need to be the way that
it's not writing from a military victory, right? It's writing from the hope of the power of their God. It's an aspirational story of what can be possible through the promises of God. And we should not ignore that the way that we as humans would like to interpret the power of God is on our behalf against our enemies. And that Jesus interrupts that story in order to tell us that we have to love our enemies too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we have Israel, who is in this fight for Canaan.
Yeah.
As marginalized, a small marginalized nation here. And then we have Rahab, who is a marginalized outsider person,
yeah,
who ends up joining this community.
Yeah.
What do you think this story of Rahab, her inclusion in Matthew as well, but what do you think this story of Rahab says to us, or to the folks who were reading it at the time, about God's heart for this marginalization?
Yeah, one of the questions that I was entertaining as I was doing research is, what does this tell us about how God acts on behalf of the oppressed? What does this story teach us about how Jesus interacts with people at the margins, or people who are in professions or cultural backgrounds that are oppressed? And gives us another lens to read that through the lineage that comes before Jesus, that emphasizes there's room for all people in this story, that you can come to profess faith in God even from the margins, that you don't have to be a perfect person to profess faith in God. And one element that I think is really wonderful about this story is that this opportunity comes to Rahab's doorstep.
Yeah,
it's not something that she seeks out, but we get to see her respond when the spies are literally in her house. The king's soldiers literally come into her house, and she has to decide, what will I do in this moment as a person of faith? What will I do having heard the stories I've heard about this God? Her decision is to say, she's savvy enough to say, oh, I see an opening here to protect my family. And I am curious enough, I am faithful enough about the stories that I've heard to say, I will profess faith in this God. I will say, I will follow this story being told, because there's room for me in it.
Yeah. What do you think about her story is a story. She has faith in this God that she's just heard of. But also the idea that she is also ultimately saving her family. This is a story of survival, survivalism, and courage that she is able to do these things. And as I look at the stories of the four women that we're talking about this month, I see that in all of those stories, that idea of agency, but also of being able to find a way to survive what's happening to yourself in this story. Is that something that you ran across while you were researching?
Yeah, absolutely. I think both that there were, she didn't have a lot of options to, you know, when you hear on your doorstep, there's some competing soldiers in your home at the same time. The king soldiers are here the invading Israelites are here. How are you going to keep them apart to keep yourself safe in that moment, in addition to thinking ahead in such a savvy way to say, oh, the battle's here. The battle's already here, and so is my family. How do I protect my family from the violence that's coming? You know, I think about the stories that we see and hear from migrants in our world today, that we hear stories of families that are fleeing violence and that are seeking a better life for themselves and for their families. And there's such a hopeful and faithful and, you know, willingness to take the risk of what you don't know, because what you're faced with at the moment is so dangerous that you have to take that leap of faith. And Rahab has to do that too. And how do we learn from Rahab's faith that this is, you know, this is a something she might never have anticipated would be on her doorstep? Maybe she thought she was going to live out her days as a successful innkeeper and or brothel owner, or choose your own adventure of the translation there. But in that moment, she decides that the faith in the unknown and the opportunity she sees ahead of her to protect her family and to live following this God about whom she has heard miraculous stories told is more accessible, more hopeful than the potential of hiding and or fleeing.
I've definitely been thinking about these stories that we've been telling kind of in light of how we can give these stories to people today.
Yeah.
And think about, what does it look like to see yourself in these stories? Particularly women who have had to go into survival mode, women who have had to find spaces where they have agency. And the gift, I think, that it is to be able to give these stories to them, to say, here, look, these stories are of women like you in the Bible. Women like us. Is there something that stood out to you that you felt a connection to at all in this story?
You know, I'm a late in life Christian. I was baptized in my mid-20s, and I was raised Unitarian Universalist, which was wonderful for me, but I got to choose to come to Christian faith. And so I think that experience of Rahab saying, I have heard the stories of your God. I have heard what your God makes possible on behalf of the small and the not mighty. And I don't know what's coming, but I want to be in that story. That's something that I think resonates with me in my own journey of faith, and is something that I posed as a question to our lecture audience when we spoke about this here on site at church, of how, wondering together, how does this change what we imagine in our professions of faith when we see Rahab, who's an outsider, who might not know how to do things yet, or like how to practice the rituals of our faith, but still wants to be a part of it. How do we meet that moment in our own faiths? And how do we offer that opportunity to the people that we encounter here in this church community, no matter their age or their experience of our faith?
Yeah, that leads me into my next question. So we know from the end of Rahab's
yes.
story, as I said before, that she marries someone from that community and has a son whose name
spoiler
is,
alert.
Spoiler alert.
It's Boaz.
And what you'll hear next week is that Boaz happens to know our next woman, Mother of the Messiah.
It's Ruth.
It's Ruth. And I just think it's so interesting that connection there.
Yeah.
What you were saying is that, you know, in talking about how we are welcoming folks at our community and
yeah.
how are we showing kindness to the outsiders. And what do you think? How do you think Boaz would have grown up knowing he had to have known his mother had been an outsider?
Oh, yeah.
You know, do you think that played into his relationship with Ruth?
I think about Rahab raising Boaz. It connects me to my own family's stories of immigration. You know, that the stories of my great-great-grandparents arriving here, that I know those stories. I've heard of their experiences, and I connect them to my own. And it helps me imagine for immigrants that I meet or that I don't even know what they might be going through and what they might hope for their future because of the stories that I've heard in my own family. And so I have to imagine that Boaz was probably corrected in his, you know, in his assumptions as we correct children when we're raising them, probably reminded many times in love and in frustration by Rahab of this is how we treat people who we think are not like us, because she had that experience of coming into this community, not being known, being new to the culture. And Matthew, as we know, was really concerned with that. How do we welcome outsiders to this culture, to this, to the rituals and the teachings? How do we include people who might not have been a part of the Exodus with us? They don't know every one of those stories, but they know my mom is new to this. And so when I look forward and meet someone who's new to this too, or who's an outsider in a different way, how will I treat them as I would have wanted my mom to be treated, as I would have wanted my great-grandparents to be treated?
Yeah. I found it so interesting. I don't think I had made that connection before that mm-hmm. this was the case, that Rahab was Boaz's mom, and
yeah.
then that may have played into how he treated Ruth.
Yeah.
I just hadn't ever made that connection before reading the genealogy in Matthew. Something that I think is interesting is, and I guess this is my question for you. What, why is the story of Rahab important? It's really sort of random in the
yeah.
midst of this battle of Jericho
yeah.
that this has happened, that she is brought out and then included in Israel. Why do you think that's an important story?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I think about this in any genealogy. Sometimes when we're reading the lists of names in any biblical story, right, the first chapter of Matthew is just this list of names. We just let that wash over us, or we don't connect those names to stories. And I think that it's intentional. Each of those people is an intentional connection, and especially the four women really jump out at us because it's so unlikely that we would see them named in this sort of patriarchal lineage.
Yeah.
So we know they're important because they've been given names and they've been given stories and some space to their story. I really do think that the importance of Rahab both points us towards how do we welcome outsiders to this faith? What does it look like for people to join into, you know, this was a very, very early in Christian history. The community was figuring out how to relate to each other and how to welcome new people into it. So it gives one model of that. I think it, in many ways, gives honor and value to people whose way of life or whose judgments we might make about who they are, what they do, that those people can profess faith too, and they're no better Christian or worse Christian than we are. Mm-hmm. So I think it helps us ease our own judgments. And I think it helps us think about the work that Jesus does to include the marginalized and to create a table of disciples who would not have sat down and broken bread together, who would not have shared a table together.
Mm.
that we think about all the women in his lineage who were incrementally teaching the people in his family before him and in the stories before him how to do that.
Yeah. What do you think, you know, what do you think Jesus would have known these stories, right?
Yes.
Jesus would have known all of these stories.
Yes, by memory.
Right? Where do you think that played into, or do you think, can you think of particular areas, do you think that may have played into how he did his ministry?
Well, there are so many stories of Jesus approaching women or including women in conversation or across cultural expectations into the story of his ministry and welcoming them into, you know, full personhood, even if they were on the margins of the society as he was encountering them, whether it's the woman at the well or the woman with the issue of blood. There are so many women in that encounter Jesus and have a moment like Rahab does and have a moment to say, there's room for me here. I can be fully who I am and who I am as a woman and who I am as having made a way for myself in a system and a world view that had very limited options for me to claim agency and power, that belonging is available to me in this faith.
It's been so fun to look at these stories of these women and think more about who they were and their importance in the story. And I think for women in the church as you and I, it's just very fun to think of ourselves in these stories. So thank you for sharing with me that some little tidbits from your own research and your own personal life. Is there anything else that you learned in this story that you thought was interesting?
I think when I read this story, it just makes me wonder about all of the stories of the members of our congregation who have their own story of encountering Christ or encountering the moment where they have either decided to continue following this, the teachings of Jesus, or they've said, yes, I'm a member of this community and this is why. And I spent some time during our Credo lecture asking people to say, how does this change your own profession of faith? Because it made me think about, okay, Rahab is modeling for me that I can step out in faith even if I don't know what's next, because of the stories I've heard of this God and how this God acts on behalf of the oppressed or on behalf of the marginalized, and what can be true for me or for people that I care about in this community together. And I wonder what is true for folks who are watching this, of how does this change the reasons why you came to this faith or why you stay as a Christian? Especially in this time where there are a lot of different definitions of Christianity around us, how do we lay claim and stake to one where there's room for all kinds of people?
Yeah, I love that. We're going to end on that because I think that's such a great question for folks at home to be able to reflect on as we finish here. So thank you very much, Natalie, for joining me today.
Thank you, Jamie.
And thank you all at home.
Thank you for listening to Crossroads. Our managing editor is Jamie Staley, and our editors are Vashina Brisbane and Emily Dombroff.